Let me say a few words before we start the show. This episode was actually recorded in mid-June, just after we talked to the Invasive Thoughts guys. So there's some reference at the end of that. This episode got bumped forward in time a little bit because on these no-guest episodes, I do the editing myself, and I just didn't get around to it. But I also thought, given Bill's imminent departure from the show, that there was some good dramatic irony here, especially in the empty street parts of this discussion. We still have a couple more episodes with Bill. We'll make it to episode 100 at least. And I've got some more or less incoherent plans about what to do after that. This is a very fun show for me, so I'd like it not to go away completely. Also, if you want to be the Bill this fall and take a philosophy class from me over the internet with some other smart fellow learners, I'm teaching one on political philosophy. Enrollment has just opened. You can go to partiallyexaminedlife.com/class to learn more and get the link to enroll. As always, hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening.
This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
I'm Mark Linsenmeyer. Your philosophy, I feel like we've run out of hierarchical terms. Your philosophy, is there a different dimension of hierarchy that we can explore?
Explore, yeah.
Adjacent, let's just say adjacent to philosophy.
Okay. And incongruent with improv or less congruent or... I'm Bill Arnett, adjacent to improv.
We can, you know, and okay. We've created a little distance between ourselves and our disciplines so we can reflect on those disciplines.
Indeed. I am not improv. I am adjacent to improv.
Yeah, I mean, who would say I am improv? What kind of pretentious douchebag? Does being a douchebag, would that prevent... Mm-hmm. Would that narrow the improv possibilities if you were a literal douchebag? I mean, you can't get much done.
If you're an inanimate object, yes. Well, here's the thing, and I'm sure this is true in the philosophy world as well. In fact, we've talked about this idea of a pop philosopher or a social media philosopher. There are definitely improvisers and musicians and anyone in the entertainment world who have realize that they are far better entertainers than they are craftspeople. Not that that's necessarily broken or wrong or whatnot, but there are some people who could sell ice to Aleuts and not feel guilty about it. You know what I'm saying? And it's one thing to be able to sell ice to people who don't need ice. It's another thing to not feel guilty about it. And I think I'm sure there are some pop psychologists who have no, you know.
I tend to be very skeptical when somebody says this philosopher is a total fraud, because that's a lot of effort to put into some sort of long con. Like, you could say they're a little confused. You could say that they have some kind of idea that, if looked at closely, does not hold water. But just to say that they know that and are actively, I guess a comparable thing would be if you are a fallen priest, you know.
Sure.
This is a literary character that no longer has, but you've already professionally committed to this line of work. You don't have anything else to do, so you just keep on preaching the gospel when in fact you have no real belief.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that there are palm readers and crystal ball observers who believe they're seeing things and truly believe that they can divine knowledge. And there are some who probably laugh about how ridiculous it is. And there's probably a lot in the middle, you know, who think they do have a gift, but some days they got a big schedule. Like, oh, come on, I got a 23 skidoo these palm readings so I can get down to, you know, pick up my kid from daycare. You know, I'm sure that happens. And I'm sure in the pop philosophy world, there are people with a million YouTube views and whatnot and a big following who are scouring the internet for what is popular now and then shoehorning, trying to massage the algorithm to make sure they stay relevant.
Sure, sure. I could see people being finding something amusing, but not necessarily. It would be very hard to be a fake preacher if you weren't even interested in Christianity. If you just like, I mean, but if you're kind of into the theology, you know, you've read a lot of the books, you have the Bible verses ready to hand. So, right. I mean, I feel like that is my attitude to philosophy. I don't promise like the Daily Stoic guy or anything that, you know,
sure.
you're going to be transformed by anything. You know, I think it's mm-hmm. worth doing enough that I bother to do it, but it's not necessarily for the reasons. But so, yes, I suppose if I were more market savvy, then I might mm-hmm. Elide that attitude.
Following the trends.
Yes.
What's trending?
And promise some great results.
What's trending? What's trending right now?
Your portfolio will vastly expand if you study Kant. Or improv. Your portfolio will vastly... If you improvise, you're going to learn to do business deals way better.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
here we go. I'm not sure if this is a philosophy thing. I'm not sure where this lands. But for some reason, the great algorithm in the sky was sending me across my various media accounts. Not that I'm married to them or have a million and one things, but we all know the great algorithm sending us stuff, our YouTube recommended viewings. And it was a whole bunch of things about, here are, you know, 5 steps to open your speech. You got a big speech you need to deliver, a big presentation. Here are, you know, 3 things you can do from the FBI's speech expert. You know, here's a TED talk about how do you open a speech. Da da da. Here's how you give a good speech. I don't know why I was getting them, but I was. You know, start with a joke. Start with a story, an empathetic story. Start with, you know, all the.
See, ways now I'm picturing FBI interrogations where you're start with a joke, start with a story. Now, where's the bomb? Yeah.
An improbable fact. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're going to go to jail forever. In fact, they're going to life extend you so you can stay in jail. What? So I was getting all those things. And it just, and the second you click on one, it's like, well, now I've just validated the great algorithm, and now I'm going to get 100 of them, a million of them. But the one thing that stuck out at me is that everything about how to give a better speech, how to give a good speech, they were all about the content of the speech. At no point did they ever say, stand up straight, speak clearly, be yourself. You know, it was all very external to, you know, regardless of topic, you should be able to start with a joke or an interesting improbable fact or make a story out of it. And it seemed a little disingenuous, but a little like, so you're saying it doesn't matter what my speech is about? Are you saying it doesn't matter who I am, who the person is delivering the speech? And somehow that's, you know, independent of how this speech begins. And are they essentially saying, it's like, oh, it's too difficult to change who you are, so let's not worry about changing who you are. Let's instead just change your speech.
Yeah, I suppose you don't have to give the advice of read the room. And so, you know, open up with a joke.
Well, it's hard advice to give, isn't it?
What kind of joke?
Yeah.
Clearly, that is a very risky. I mean, is it going to be a dirty joke? Is it going to be especially highbrow, hard to understand mm-hmm. joke? Is going to be very intellectual? Is it going to be
mm-hmm. cancelable?
Yes.
In our present context. And, you know, again, that's just it. Again, there's a piece of me, and maybe it's the contrarian inside of me. Maybe it's the, you can't tell me what to do, that feels like, well, no, I think the content of the speech, the subject matter, the environment, all those things, who I am, all those things should be more informative as to how this speech should begin than pick one of these 3 things. Does that make sense? And what if all speeches begin that? What if you go to a TED Talk and it's like, we're going to have 10 15-minute, 20-minute speeches with a lunch in between. It's going to be great. We've got people talking about alternative energy. We've got people talking about walkable cities. We've got people talking about da-da-da-da-da. His whole litany, and every single one is like, there was a young woman named Janine. Now, you might, does that make sense? They all start with the same empathetic story. It's like, oh my gosh, is this going to be boring? Is this whole thing going to be boring? Does that mean you hear what I'm saying?
I mean, I think you're describing one of the political conventions where they have all these speakers in a row.
And, and all of them are
pretty much have the same thing to say.
Yeah. It's like, at no point do they say, watch the speech prior to yours and don't do what they do.
I, too, was born in a coal mining town. I, too, had parents that were struggling, and they would tell me, don't you eat those ping pong balls. I know we're very poor, but you don't have to eat ping pong balls. Mm-hmm. And they all say that.
I tell you what, the most conservative person I ever met was a Democrat. Yeah. And then the next person. Well, it sure is nice to be here. I hope Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't show up. Whatever.
They could use these jokes. They could pass them on from speaker to speaker.
Exactly. And when I think of things, reasons why I don't like it, is that just me trying to justify my contrariness? You know what I'm saying? Or is that a real concern?
That people are uncreative about how they put speeches together and that they're getting directions that are not helpful.
Not constructive to the entire event or the entire evening. A single speech that begins with a joke, perhaps, yes. But an entire evening of speeches that begin with jokes. Maybe they should do like, okay, political convention, I call dibs on starting with a joke. Okay. I'll start with an empathetic story. Okay. I'm going to start with a improbable fact. Okay. All right. You see, everybody, this is how we do it. This is how we,
Well, probably you should start speeches the same way that you do start interrogations, which is just stare at them until they just volunteer things.
Yeah.
So just walk out.
We know you did it.
To your audience, and you just stare at them. And you check your watch every once in a while, and it becomes that John Cage 4 minutes and 13 seconds or whatever it is, where the whole speech was. Yeah. And then at the end, you have to reveal it. Like, don't you think?
And that's my. Yeah.
The thoughts that were in your head. That's my impression. What?
Yeah. And that's my impression of the Trump administration. Wow.
Yeah. Doing nothing.
Doing nothing.
See, that's a good
get it?
Punchline.
You can use it, DNC.
But and then all of them do that.
Well, yeah, exactly. So wait a minute. We can't have an entire evening, everybody sitting there for 4.5 minutes and then blaming on the Trump administration. The crowd is boo. We know the punchline already. No, this one's different. This was just, we got another 2.5 minutes. This punchline will be different.
Yeah, I want to emphasize how the Bush administration didn't do anything, and that's why we're in the situation we are now. Yes.
Sparse.
And it goes applause. Back to the Warren G. Harding administration. As the Depression was going on, what did they do? Exactly that silence that I just delivered to you.
Okay, our next speaker will be up now. This is the junior senator from South Carolina. Yeah. And then they're up doing nothing for 4.5 minutes. Yeah.
I mean, probably people would prefer to just mess around on their phones. So it's kind of doing a service to them to, like, you don't want it to be rude for people to be messing with their phones while you're talking. So you should just not talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, everybody, before my speech begins, everyone just, if you got something you would check on your phone real fast, you send a quick message. Go for it. Let's do it now. You got 30 seconds and then I'll start. Great. And that's my impression of, wait a minute, was that part of the speech? No. Speech. All right. Now I'm just confused.
The Trump administration, too, encourages us to mess around with our phones. because we have to track. We have to look at the news all the time. We have to doom scroll. It's all a doom scroll. The big doom, big doom wants us to scroll all the time. And that's why they got this guy in office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big doom sounds like something that should be trademarked or something. That could be a thing. That could go viral. Could trend.
Qui bono.
That could trend. Yeah.
Ragnarok is the one benefiting.
Yeah.
The gods looking down upon us and rejoicing in our folly. Those are the ones that benefit. So they clearly have set the seeds, have set the ball rolling, planted the seeds.
Yeah. Is Ragnarok a verb or a noun?
I mean, I think you could Ragnarok however you want. Verb. That's really quite Ragnarok of you. I think it could be an adjective.
Suggest that. Okay. I've just never been sure.
I mean, I'm just walking around Ragnarok here. I wasn't saying that's a place. I'm saying that was an adverb of how I'm walking.
Ah, okay. All Ragnarok'd. Yeah.
And now I got to look and see if there's got to be a rock band.
An official.
Like a Ragnarok around the clock.
Yes. Or just Ragnarok. And it's probably from the 60s or 70s. Probably some, proto-metal band singing about Tolkien and or Nordic mythology, one of the five pillars of heavy metal music.
You should also give people prompts to people are using their phones while they're doing your speeches because they're looking up your speech to see who you lifted it from, to see if are we gonna get to point where it's hard to just do a simple Google search to see if your students are cheating with their essays, where ChatGPT can at least say, yeah, that sounds like one of mine.
Yeah, exactly. At what point was everything conceivably AI? I do think that if you turn in a paper clearly written by AI, you should have AI grade it. And then if you don't like your grade, take it up with AI.
Yeah, well, and it should be able to say, first and foremost, this is clearly written by AI. AI should be able to spot what was been written by AI and probably be a little saucy about like those other AIs. I mean, this is not something I would write. That's something ChatGPT would write.
Clearly, yes. The use of semicolons is very ChatGPT. Ugh.
And every time they use the word fingers, there's like an extra S in it.
Yes.
That's a mid-journey joke. Okay. Is it okay for your papers to at least use illustrations by AI? Because that's not usually.
So. Yeah.
It's just a helpful aid.
It is. Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference between what common people think AI does or can do and then my friends who are educators, what they see AI do and how they use AI to do things. And a big thing, a buddy of mine, who was a doctoral candidate in education, he's like, oh, it's great for I don't want to read this long, boring dissertation that, can I have AI summarize it for me? It's like, yeah, okay, well, that's good. And then they're not necessarily using it to plagiarize things, but they're using it to kind of increase their workflow a little bit. Or here's a topic, I'm having problems Google searching or everything's in another language. I'll use AI to at least send me on the right track. Tell me about this Japanese god from the Edo period. Great. Thanks, AI. You in 30 seconds, you at least gave me something I can look for. The things to look for in the right direction. Does that make sense? That's like a research tool.
Well, yes, Wes. I'm not as into, I've never had a stable so far, I've used ChatGPT, but then I don't remember how I logged. I don't remember now how I did that.
Get to it.
So, but he's now using it for, I think we should read this thing, but what is the best order to read these things in? How do I get 50 pages that would be most helpful out of this author about this topic? And so it's using it to kind of help guide what we're choosing to read. And yeah, exactly. Which authors and which selections.
And teachers are catching people doing a bad job using AI. And that's always hilarious to me that, like, if you think you're cutting corners by using AI and you turn in a paper that's just one gigantic paragraph for pages with no page breaks or no, you know, paragraph breaks with clear errors, you know, or like, you know, sometimes teachers will insert gotchas into their prompts, you know, something written in, you know, 1-point type that you can't read, but AI will see. And it's just a basic proofreading should catch those things. So I think it's like, oh, don't feel like AI is getting under the radar here. For the students who are smart enough to use AI and double check AI's work, maybe they are learning something. Maybe by having AI write your paper and then being smart enough to go through it and be like, well, that's ridiculous, or that does not work. I need to, that's something I would never say. Students don't talk like that. In that regard, maybe they're learning just as much as they would have, you know, ripping stuff out of the encyclopedia, you know?
What about a new AI that we can create called, and call it Emily Latella, as in tribute to the classic Gilda Radner character who would misunderstand something and then have a whole like news segment based on the misunderstanding. So that if you use that, you students can go to this and, you know, it asks about Kant's critique of pure reason and like, I don't think Kant should have been so negative about raisins. You know, why is he, what's wrong with him? Did he just not have good raisins in Germany and just, you know, have a 10-page paper on this? And then, oh, it's reason. Never mind. And it just puts that at the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. Yes. How do you feel about AI taking our jobs? Is that going to happen? Do you fear that's going to happen?
Not the good jobs. I mean, there are no good. There are very few good jobs. Yeah. I mean, it's just a progression in the kind of thing that's already been happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to get me started on the whole the whole jobs or having enough jobs for everybody is just a fruitless exercise. And the whole idea that we should just get all of our money out of jobs is, you know, has historical limits. Let's put it that way.
So you're saying that, to clarify, that having a job should not be the basis for income.
Yes.
Or determining one's value in society.
Yeah. And it will just, I mean, already we're at the point where quite a few people seem to be able to live in some way without having the way that jobs are evolving and in terms of more home time or more flex time or all that kind of stuff is definitely moving in that sort of direction. But there's still the social expectation that it is, you know, if you are the kind of person who, you know, sits around playing video games all day, that's bad. And I think eventually we will be like, well, okay, well, that's one. It's cheaper for us to just cut them a check.
Yes.
And let them continue to do that, then find some bullshit for them to do just so we feel like we're not.
But they're getting something for, they're not doing anything.
We're enabling parasites.
Why do they get something for free? Why don't I get something for free?
I mean, yes, we should just all get things for free. That's the freedom dividend. Okay. That's the.
Yeah.
But of course, is that globally feasible? There's lots of things to go into it about, but it's at least something that we should not be as morally judgmental and temperamental about as we are.
I can see that. It's like, yeah, if you want to live in a studio apartment and we'll pay, we'll give you, you know, $500 a month and you can live in a studio apartment for free. Awesome. But that's all you're getting.
Right.
You know, you'll get a fairly bare bones existence. You don't really get to pick where your house is. You'll get assigned a unit somewhere. It won't be in a slum, but it's not going to be, you know, necessarily where you want it to be. Great. Yes. You get your free stuff. Congratulations. Enjoy your free stuff. And I mean, if you asked people, it's like, would you choose that over having a job and being able to have a fun car and a fun life. No, I don't mind working if I know I'm getting something for it. You know, I can, you know, especially if it's a rewarding job.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're describing public housing, and then that does not become a nice alternative.
Well, it's not that it's like, even if it's beautiful and
Cabrini
nice, it's like
green.
Come on, now, I didn't say a slum. I didn't.
You don't get to choose where you go.
Yeah. Well, that's again. I think that this is probably the in between times. This is between Star Trek and now, is where we do let people, quote unquote, do nothing. But they just don't have much freedom. They sacrifice some independence for the right to play video games all day.
I feel like we're making a transition here. I feel oh something is flowing through me. It's time to go to empty street. It's time to go to empty street. It's time to go to empty street where the streets are full of basically nothing. So pretty much, I mean, I'm not sure why you feel the need to just, you know, run the registers all day. It seems like we have equal levels of satisfaction when I'm not running the registers all day, when I'm just here, you know, in your space.
Well, I have to. We had some people call in sick today, so I gotta cover. Gotta cover for Mark and Julie. They called in sick and so I got to run the registers today.
But just have you thought about just letting them be? I mean, why this so active with the registers? Why not?
I mean, people want things, and I can't, you know, the store buys goods and puts them on the shelves, and then we sell them for a little bit more than we paid for them. And then that's my salary.
And then you just use that salary up, and then you just need more.
So well, why I use even it up bother? to have a nice house and a nice car, and I get happiness from going to the movies. What's the last time you went to a movie?
You can usually get in the movies.
Bert, when's the last time you went to a movie through the front door?
I mean, if there's like a big crowd, you can kind of just walk behind them. So usually the big
Star Wars. I'm guessing Star Wars is the last time you saw a movie.
Yeah, I felt like it was A New Hope that I should, you know, have some sort of experience this thing that people were talking about. And
okay. Well, what if everybody went to the movies for free, Bert? What if everybody just snuck in? You know, how would Mark Hamill make any money?
I mean, I think that people enjoyed making those films. Probably he enjoyed being in those films. And then if he was just sneaking in the movies all the time, he wouldn't need to make any money from the movie. He would just want to be in it. It's like when we had the poetry reading here. It's like when we had the play here. You know, granted, some of the audience members didn't know. Some of the actors didn't know they were in the play. But,
no,
you know,
they were quite confused, actually.
I guess that's just, you know, art finds you is what I'm saying. You don't have to go out and certainly money seems like it taints the art. So you just want
to find if everybody did everything for free and no one paid for anything,
then we all be very happy.
Well, slow down. Well, what if there's not enough of something to go around? How do we determine who gets it if there's not enough of something?
Well, it depends what the thing is. You know, they say that Jesus, he made those loaves, the fishes. That seems like a good scalable solution.
You might get tired of loaves and fishes. What about like, oh, I want a sports car. You've seen my car out there.
I mean, it's a pretty
cool. I got
cool.
a sweet It's 95 Trans Am that I love to work on my days off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I like that you take the initiative and you don't, you know, have the oil change done somewhere else. You just do it yourself.
Correct.
Yeah, so just do more of that. That people, I feel like these ideas have been floating around. I heard about this IKEA that they just stopped having employees that it's just like the robots and the customers, and then the customers kind of come in and just do everything themselves. And so what about that here? Why have a register?
You just turn it backwards so that customers can just ring themselves up.
Well, you'd have to, you know, just like shut the drawer. But yeah, they have the kiosks at these places. Why don't you just do that? Yeah, they do.
But there are kiosks that is available.
Like I worked for a little while as a gas pumper. And now they don't have those anymore. The people just fill up themselves. And sometimes
New Jersey,
I will offer, I haven't done this in a while, but you know, I will stand out there and I will offer to fill up their tanks.
A little spooky.
For a little scratch. And they generally don't appreciate it. They'd rather use the robot. So it's okay if robots take the jobs.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that many robots around, especially at IKEA. I would say some of the employees who are unhappy with their position behave as though they are robots, but I'm not really sure.
So Mark is actually a person? Yes. I guess you said he was homesick today, but I assumed that meant like that he needed his oil changed.
Yeah, no. Mark is a person. I understand he's not pleasant. He's not really happy a lot.
I mean, I've tested his responses. I ask him questions, and it sounds like ChatGPT. It does not sound like an actual person would say those things.
I think he's just being polite. He is not a robot. He's not a robot.
So is he one of the better employees because of his robotic attitude, or is he a worse employee?
He is. I can trust him, but I feel bad that customers have to interact with him. How about that?
Yeah, yeah.
He's grouchy, surly, no nonsense, easily distracted by personal issues, often on his phone. His register always comes incorrect. He's on here, you know, he keeps an eyeballs on the bathrooms. He hollers at customers who are causing trouble, you know. So you take the good, you take the bad.
You take it all. There you have the fact of life. I think that's...
Yeah.
Socrates or something.
Yeah, Mrs. Garrett. But yeah, we'll say Socrates.
And do you feel like you could inspire with some improv training, for instance, some sort of more variety in his responses to customers so that they have a more fulfilled experience?
You know, this is a gas station on the side of the highway. Customer experience, you know... I don't imagine anybody other than you ever coming back. We don't get much repeat business.
I mean, it does seem like you're not very observant. If you do, we get to some of the same people. They have their roots. They have. I mean, there's
some delivery drivers. Yeah. Okay. And the guy dropping off food here, that doesn't count as a repeat customer.
And that guy that is like UPS, and he just says that every day. I'm pretty sure that might be a robot, but because just he always is like UPS and then he hands you stuff.
Yeah. He's not a robot. That's the delivery driver. Not a customer either. He's a human.
It's just, it's the tone. It's the same. The delivery is the same. It's
wouldn't you love to have a juicy steak dinner with all the trimmings one of these days and a cocktail?
I mean, I get around. You just are pleasant. You know, you give me some stuff from the soda machine when in the old donuts. Like that's pretty. It's pretty much the same thing.
Okay. Well, I just figured. You know, it's just. Yeah, working sucks, but I, you know, there's some. It's nice to be able to go to the movies or have a vacation or like. I'm going to the Bahamas this summer.
Which one?
Nassau? Whichever Bahama it's on?
I've always been confused by that as a plural. Now, is it a bunch of islands?
It's a bunch of islands. It's a bunch of islands. Yeah.
And are they Baja? Are they low down? Are they?
Yes, they start due east of Florida and southern Florida, and then extend into the Caribbean Ocean. In fact, they may not even be in the Caribbean. I feel like the Caribbean is more bounded by Cuba, you know, Hispaniola, and the Antilles. I'm not sure if the Bahamas are part of the Caribbean. But they've got a Caribbean vibe. How about that? But the point is, I'm going, thanks to all the time and effort I put in here.
And you have somebody, how's your family? You're going to bring them with you? You got anybody?
No. We don't. My wife will have the kids, and that's fine. They probably like her a little better than me anyway. I keep odd hours, as you know. You also keep odd hours. I don't know if you ever have kept regular hours.
I got a lot of things on my plate, so, you know, I come and go.
That's fine.
Chasing the opportunities for fulfillment, really, is what it comes down to.
Okay. All right. Well, what if fulfillment requires some degree of cash, of income?
I mean, it's just a matter of how you interpret it. If I'm saving up for something, then it's just a little bit every day. And then, you know, you just put out, whether you put out something to that people can contribute to, or you, you know, get an investor.
An investor.
Who sees the promise in what you can deliver. Yeah. So, I mean, I really, this is quite a while back, but there was like this, you had to have like 1,000 pennies. To do what I was trying to do. It was like this arena, and you put these like metal worms in them, and then you click on the magnet and they fight. You ever see that?
1,000 pennies? That's $10.
Yeah, and that seemed like it was really hard to save up, but then eventually, once you look at it in a different way, it's only $10, and that was pretty easy, and I enjoyed that purchase. That's one of the ones I remember purchasing when I was in that game.
You are aware, game. Just in the time we've had this conversation, I have earned $10 in salary.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that one could do. But if there was some kind of other system, more widespread, I mean, I'm just trying to share the secrets of good living that I have acquired. And help you, because I feel like you know, every day you come in here, you're a little more pale. Maybe going to the Bahamas, that's supposed to recharge the melanin.
The batteries.
The melatonin. The
melanoma. Are you going to be okay I'm out of town? I will wear a hat and sunscreen.
That's the important thing. Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to be okay while I'm gone?
I have many places that I go and many people that I see, and
okay.
And a lot of them are more receptive to different economic ideas about how one could get along in the world, and they might not, you know, they support a fellow traveler.
Just, well, I mean, informed, you know, my managers, my boss is regional. They know I'll be gone. I have said we've got people here who can cover. But they may send someone down. They may send another assistant manager from another branch. And they may not be as friendly.
Yeah, they might be like that Mark. You might be a robot. They're going to replace you with a robot. That's what's going to happen. Well,
for 2 weeks while I'm gone.
And then when they see how much it works out, then you're going to just stay in the Bahamas, I guess, because they're going to say, we love this robot. This robot does not give us any back talk, does not give us any lip.
I don't give back. You know, now you're just inventing problems for robots to solve and then justifying it with invented problems.
I mean, usually when the people come and they buy things and they talk to you, you talk back. Isn't that back talk?
It's conversing. We're conversing. Am I talking back to you?
Yes, and I'm talking back to you. That's the way. That's what I'm saying. That the robots, like Mark, I try to engage him about quite a few things. Nothing.
Look, I'm just concerned that when I'm not here, someone who is not as understanding and generous, who is not cool with impromptu poetry theatrical performances involving unconsenting patrons, that could get you in trouble. And that's, does that make sense? Does it matter what the laws are? Does it matter who's enforcing it?
It just depends how you interpret these things. That it could just be sort of an extra challenge, like when you're going to see a movie and you know, they've changed their policies and you can't just kind of get an old ticket and then say it's a new ticket and then spend all day in the theater and then go to a different theater and then spend the rest of the day in that theater. Sometimes they don't let you do that.
Just so you know, there are other managers out there who would have had you arrested years ago.
And it's mostly I blame Pee-wee, because it used to be like, you know, they just
Pee-wee Herman
trusted you in the theaters. And now, you know, because they know what you can get up to in the theaters.
Gross.
Right. But he ruined it for everybody. I'll never forgive him for that.
I kind of need you to understand that regardless of what the rules are, if the person enforcing the rules chooses to enforce them in such a way, this could be a very long 2 weeks for you.
I think you've hit on exactly how this can work. The post job economic age is just choosing to not enforce certain rules so that then, you know, we just let the robots do stuff and then we just don't tell them. And then we just take all of the booty that comes out of that. So you could have a robot and the robot's like, when do I get to go to the Bahamas? And you're like, oh, tomorrow. But then you never let them go to the Bahamas.
Robots and salt water don't mix.
Exactly.
I'll just.
Good point.
I don't know what a robot vacation would consist of.
I think that might be a good next, you know, maybe when Mark comes back, we'll have him play the robot. Because even if he's not a robot, he's very good at that. And then some of the customers who are, I think the Taco Bell ones, because they're a little more spicy. They're a little more, we could then interpret their interactions as a robot vacation and reflect on that.
I am predicting Mark not being game with that. Let me just say. I don't think he's going to play along.
He doesn't even have to. He's a robot. He'll respond. Again, it's all how you interpret things. So if a customer comes up and like, I want to give me some of those cigarettes behind there. Well, what are those words even mean? They could also mean, hey, robot, it's time for your vacation. Get aboard the robot bus to the robot Robahama. Robahamas. I think we're getting something here.
All right. And ocean swimming pools of hot oil.
Yes. And then when Mark says, here are your cigarettes, show me your ID, then that means, yes, I'm enjoying the Robahama oil bath. And then we just applaud.
All right. Well, I think that'll work. I think that sounds fantastic. There are some customers lining up behind you, and I do need to check them out.
All right. Well, I'll just be over here.
Okay. I want you to think of a plan in case you get kicked out on the first day I'm gone. Okay.
I have many, many plans, plans within plans.
You say that, but I don't think that's true.
All right. Well, I'm glad we had this intervention session so that you could think about your economic choices. And I think I've really planted some seeds that will get you to reevaluate things and maybe stop being, I don't want you to become a robot. I'm just really concerned that as you become more pale,
pump number four, that you're on pump number four. Okay.
Yeah.
Pack of gum too. Okay. 3829. Excellent. Thank you very much.
See, that was a very authentic thank you. That's not a Mark thank you. Mark would have been like,
thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Just the hot dog. Okay. Bring that up for you. All right. 428. It's a touch. It's a touch.
You shouldn't. There. Okay. Those hot dogs, they're going to kill you.
Let's not.
All right.
Let's not talk to the customers. And so
it fades out. The audio fades out. It says continues indefinitely with the commentary. Yes. So I felt like the first time we did our empty street that that my character was trying to cause you to reevaluate your capitalist situation but kind of gave up a little easily. So I just wanted to be a little more tenacious about it, but you really turned it around on me. You just didn't give an inch. there were no compelling arguments coming out of me that would.
Well, I am sympathetic towards all that and do realize a reckoning is probably on the horizon. But then again, it's that whole like, great. So who pays my rent? You know, and that whole like, and I think Glenn is very practical and pragmatic. And while he dreams of a better world, he can't afford to take time off work to facilitate that. It'd be awesome if someone else made the world better, which is probably, you know, maybe 85% of us.
All right. Well, we can revisit after the character has come back from his vacation and see what's going on in that.
Hey, if you have any guests, if I'm out, we have any guests, you know, and you want to roll with somebody else here as the other manager.
That's true. That you could play a different character in the setting. Yeah. We had not thought about having us retain the setting. And instead of being Luke and Beau, we would be Vance and Jerry.
Coy and Vance.
Coy and Vance. I couldn't remember. Yes. And Jerry. I'm the funniest. I'm the most Jewy of the Duke boys.
Oh boy. Yeah.
They should have. There's a missed opportunity there.
There was no Jerry Lewis Duke. I'm not aware of. Yeah.
Anything else on your mind, philosophically, improvisationally?
That's it. That's all I've been thinking about.
All right. Well, I knew that I wanted to revisit, you know, and have some you and me time. We've had a lot of good guests. Some of them, they have so much going on that I don't want to. We couldn't bring the St. John's classroom into Empty Street. We know what would that even mean?
Yeah,
they'd have to just have a. When I was working at this IP telephony place, there was talk about this is sort of. I'm trying to think what 97 or so. This was 2006. Their video conferencing was becoming more of a normal thing for business meetings. And the models that they had was that like you would have this room set up. So it's half a conference room and you would paint it a uniform color. And then and you'd have this giant screen. And then they would have their half also painted that same color. So you could pretend that you're in the same room. It was a completely ridiculous thing. Nobody ever actually did.
Yeah.
But this was and useless. Like it's not, you're not fooling anybody. It's not life size pixel to, you know, you're never going to think that they're in the same room with you.
Yeah.
So we've had to do something like that with the St. John's classroom has become part of the Empty Street. Like we've temporarily painted it. We put up a blackboard at the very least.
Yeah.
All right. Now this is seeming like a good idea, but I didn't seize on it at that moment.
That's fine.
Oh, we did have a piece of old business from our last. Yeah. Okay. So that our last thing with the fellas from St. John's and our second skit, our second scene involved me accusing you all of, you know, basically coming up with a form of joke. But I never asked you guys to tell me your favorite thing that you said to a student in that form. Would that have been obnoxious to push on you and the fellas that I've created this way of telling a joke, which is you are a dumb son of a bitch, as Nietzsche would say. You know, and using that just as an excuse to abuse your students.
Yes.
So what was your favorite one that you said, I'm going to do it now?
an actual favorite thing I said to a student?
No, I'm asking you to come up with a joke in that form.
Oh, okay. Some might say that you're the stupidest kid in class. How is that?
According to St. Thomas Aquinas. I mean, I think if you have to add that.
Okay, you really wanted the attribution. Oh, I mean, the famous attribution. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yes. Well, you're the... Well, now I got to think of another one.
Because now, is he going to be, St. Thomas Aquinas is going to be asking, but
there's beautiful,
on you in particular.
There's ugly, and there's you, Gordon Richards, as said by Winston Churchill.
Yeah, I think that
he knew your name. He knew you by name.
I think just bringing this up and making it more concrete and challenging you and, you know, probably you first, but then the other guys too. We might uncover some things about that format of joke that were not revealed in my mere attempts to do it myself a couple times. No,
it's fine. It's good. I like it.
So, but as a general improv technique, like I was sitting here doing palindromes and then you spurt out 5 palindromes and then try to make the other people do palindromes. It seems like that's obnoxious, but yet that's the kind of thing that is done by good improvers.
There is a word, you don't hear it as much as you used to, called pimping, which is, hey, I just got this letter, you read it. You know, what? Or just kind of as you said, hey, let's all speak in foreign accents, you know. Oh, Mark, why don't you read that poem that you wrote me about earlier? It was so, I think everyone would love to hear the poem you wrote. Dude, you know, now again...
Should we just do that immediately?
Is it funny? Sometimes? Does it come up honestly sometimes? Yes, but there are going to be people who think it's hilarious and do it on purpose.
Yeah, especially with the people that have never improvised before. I think that we should do that to them immediately.
Uncool.
We should.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's in the same... Well, it's in the same ballpark. I mean, when we had the woman on that, then I accused her character... you know, of having a drinking problem, and that seemed a little that she just mostly chose to ignore and properly.
That was amazingly insensitive, and I think we should end the show. Said Indira Gandhi.
Okay,
there you go.
That's good. A nice shortish one. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Bill.
Good stuff, everybody.
Bye.
Take care. I should sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.